Welcome to the Voice for Life podcast, where we're discussing New Zealand's latest abortion stats that came out 2 days ago. Today we have Brendan Malone joining us, and we're going to be diving into all the stats and answering some kind of common questions that have been coming up over the past few days. So buckle yourself in, here we go. So thank you for joining us today, Brendan. We do appreciate having you on board. I know that over the past number of years, you have really dove into some of the stats a lot. And so you have a good, understanding of where things are at now and where they've been in the past. So we appreciate you coming today. It's great. So, abortion stats, where are they at? What has happened? So over the past year, do you want to just give a little breakdown of where things are at?
Yeah, well, first of all, Lydia, thank you for having me on the show. It's great to be here. And one thing I'd say before we even get into numbers really is, and just as you sort of gave that very gracious introduction to me, was I realised, it's not just an awareness of the numbers and how they've been tracking, but the way in which the data is being reported and the timing of it too. Like here we are, like what are we, maybe 7 to 10 days away from most workplaces and the country shutting down, and last minute, here you go, like 2 days ago, here's the abortion data. And it's got serious information in it. We're getting at the end of the year when people are less focused. And then also what's in the reports is just, it's not as well reported, it's fair to say.
No.
There's consistency.
It's 44 pages long, and it's kind of got a lot of fluff.
Yeah. The key data, though, that you've asked about, and I think this is the horrific tragedy of it, is that we're talking now about another increase in the total number of abortions, 17,785 last year. So that's up from 16,277 last year, from the previous report. So this is the 2024 year that we're talking about now. And we're now at basically almost 49 unborn children aborted every single day of the year if you average it out in this country, which is just, it's hard to get your head around those numbers, right? And what the shocking reality of this represents, though, is that basically you are now looking at a 9.3% increase in abortions from the previous year, and so we've basically seen consistent end-on-end increases in abortion. And what that means is that we are now looking down the barrel of a 32% increase in abortions in our country, a 32% rise since the passing of the Extreme Abortion Legislation Act in 2020. And one of the things we were specifically told by the architects like Jacinda Ardern and the other Labor, National, Green, and I think even some New Zealand First MPs who supported that particular bill, we were told that there was not going to be an increase at all. This was just going to be a simple change of the law. Some things would be shuffled around. It would be more pro-woman. The Crimes Act reference would be changed, but the abortions would stay as they were, and they haven't. We've now had a one-third increase, and it's absolutely shocking, but not surprising to, as you know, those of us who are pro-life, we warned that this would be an outcome.
We did indeed, and we were definitely told it wasn't going to happen. Now, some people would say, well, is this just a population increase? Has the numbers of Kiwis, grown that much that it's just more people, are having abortions?
No, and that's a common question that you always get. If you see the abortion rate go up, it's interesting, people never ask it as it goes down, but if it goes up, they always ask, and sometimes people will even outright try and claim without any substance whatsoever that, it's just because there's an increase in population. There's more women have come into the country, and so therefore there are more abortions happening in total, but there's not more abortions happening, if you know what I mean, per capita. But in actual fact, no, that it's definitely an increase. So there's different numbers we can look at, and the report does provide these, thankfully. So we can look at what is sometimes known as the abortion rate, and that is the number of abortions per 1,000 females who are aged 15 to 44. That's sort of considered the typical sort of fertility window globally. And so how many abortions per 1,000 women aged 15 to 44, or females, sorry, because obviously if you're 15, you're a child. 16.6 is the abortion rate now. And if you go back to 2020, it was only 13 per 1,000 females aged 15 to 44. And what's quite startling is it sat around 13, it was sort of elevated to 13.5, and then it would drop down again, then go 13.6. It sat around 13 since about 2016. And then all of a sudden, after the passing of the Abortion Legislation Act, it skyrockets upwards. So that's now at 16.6. And the other one that's quite an important measure is the abortion ratio, which tells us the number of abortions that are happening per 1,000 known pregnancies. So basically, these are people who have conceived a child that we know about, and have then, per 1,000 children that have been conceived, how many have been aborted? And last year, that number has gone up again. It was 221. It's now 232. 232 abortions per 1,000 known pregnancies. So basically, that indicates, like last year, almost 25% of known pregnancies were ended in abortion, which is shocking. It's 1 in 4 now. It wasn't that high previously. And just to give listeners a bit of a sense of where it's been, if you go back and look at the previous data before 2020, which is the passing of the Abortion Legislation Act, it basically hovered around 186. It would sort of go up and down, but it sat around that sort of mid-180s. Mm. And since it had been there since 2014. And then bang, it skyrockets up again on the back of the Abortion Legislation Act.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and it's showing that more women are choosing to have it. But also, some of the other things that we're seeing is changes in the gestation ages that women are having abortions and stuff like that. So there's just so much information that it's showing, but also lacking. What other concerning things are you seeing in this report?
Yeah, this is one of those things too where, like, you see something like what I'm about to talk about and you think, surely the report should actually cover and talk about this particular troubling fact. And the troubling fact I'm referring to is in the latest report, what we're seeing is that the number of under 15-year-olds, so this is girls under the age of 15, who are having abortions, has now almost doubled since 2022. So it was 26 under 15-year-old abortions previously. In the latest report, it's now 48. And there are really serious questions about this that basically should be asked, because if you go back again and look at the previous data, that figure, under 15-year-old abortions, had been lower and had been holding steady prior to 2020. And then again, it just skyrockets upwards. And you would think that we would have like a vested interest in asking the question, hold on a minute, what's going on here? Why have we suddenly had the situation where we're almost double the number of under 15-year-olds? Like, you know, that we're talking here, what, 14, 13, maybe even younger, who are having abortions. That's not good, and we should be alarmed by that. And it's just there. It's sort of blasé. Here it is. It's just in the report. No one talking about the ramifications of it.
Yeah, what's causing all these young girls to be pregnant in the first place, right?
Or exactly.
What's happening in our society that's causing those kind of things? And why are they having abortions? Is it to hide the fact that they're pregnant? Like, is it, yeah.
Well, and also, like, with, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but with the quote-unquote telehealth service where you can ring the 0800, you know, dial an abortion pill service, you got to wonder, how are they actually interfacing? Are they even having a conversation with, like, a medical professional in a meaningful kind of way, or are they sort of going on a conveyor belt process and getting their hands on an abortion pill?
Exactly, because one of the things that we are seeing missing from the report is also there's limited access there's no reporting on how many women are actually receiving abortion counselling. And so are they just being told this is kind of your option, like, without given any kind of other forms of support? Like,
yeah, what are we seeing? Like, that's a really key point, because there's two things that stick out to me. One is in this report, again, they sort of, it's almost like gloating, but they're certainly celebrating what they see as a improvement. And they claim that the fact that the abortions are happening younger and younger, like the gestational age of the unborn children who are being aborted is getting younger. And it's been a decrease again this year from the previous report. And that they're celebrating that. They're saying that's proof of a reduction of and removal of barriers to women. But I look at that and I say, hold on, is that actually a removal of barriers? Or what you are referring to here as like barriers, were they actually safeguards? Are there things that are missing here? Like are people having genuine conversations and being offered genuine caring options? Do they have community around them? Because basically, the easier you make it, the speedier and the quicker this pathway becomes, and that's not a caring medical system. The other reason why this really sticks out, like what you've said there, it doesn't reference the question of abortion or pre-abortion counselling. It just talks about it briefly, but doesn't give any data on it. It's because we had a report just months ago, a different report from the same service, that specifically focused on the question of pre-abortion counselling. And that highlighted that that has dropped off a cliff in New Zealand. So basically now, 85% of girls and women who have abortions do not get any pre-abortion counselling. And then of the other 15% who do actually get pre-abortion counselling, a large percentage of that is taking place in the actual abortion provider facility. So there's a lack of transparency in what's going on where it is happening, and there's not enough of it happening. And so you'd think that you've just had this previous report, like literally just months ago, indicating that this is a particular issue and highlighting this. And you would think that in the latest data, they would want to actually give some follow-up information. Were they prepared for that? Have they been keeping the data? Is there even any consistency here? Like, do they even consider it important to say, well, we've raised what is clearly an issue? Do they even see it as an issue? And therefore, perhaps in our follow-up annual abortion statistics, we should actually highlight and tell people what's happening as a follow-up, what's going on in this area. Because as you and I know, this is extremely serious. And the lack of counselling is a very alarming factor to see happening in our country like this.
That's very true. Both the counselling, but like you touched on, also the follow-up. And what we're seeing is a kind of increase in numbers of adverse effects as well, right? And how much follow-up has actually been done and how many of the adverse outcomes are actually being recorded or which ones aren't being recorded? Because, I mean, pain, people are just going to be told, well, that's just a normal part of having an abortion, right? And so are people actually going to record all of these things? Let's dive into that a little bit too.
Well, I think this is one really key area because what was highlighted in the last report is absolutely astounding when you consider it, what the implications are. What we saw highlighted was that basically the number of abortion complications for women who have abortions has almost doubled since 2021. So in the latest report, it hasn't increased since last year. It is sitting on 2.2% of all abortions. Now the women involved have complications that require follow-up care. Now, that number was 2.2% last year as well, but in 2021, it was only 1.3%. So the number is almost doubled now from where it was. And that should surely, if you are as pro-choice advocates and activists often claim, like we're really pro-woman and we care about women's health, they should be screaming from the rooftops about this. They should be saying, what's going on? Why has it suddenly, this problem, arisen where the number of complications for women has almost doubled? And, I mean, we know the answer and we'll probably end up talking about it because it's the introduction of the what they call early medical abortions, the abortion pill, which carries far greater risks. And it's so obvious when you look at the report and look at the data. But that should be a point at which people should be saying, hey, hold on, this isn't good. And yet again, this report highlights it has not decreased, it has remained steady. And even though the percentage remains steady, the big issue here is the fact that because you've had more abortions overall, that means more women have actually, in total number of women, have actually been harmed as a result of their abortion this year. So even though the percentage is the same, the total number has gone up because more women have had abortions. And so there should be attention, there should be focus on this. And like I said, the previous report indicated it as well. And not only did they not even mention this, no one's talked about this. The report doesn't talk about it. The media didn't even cover last year's data. But the fact is that the opening introduction to last year's report was talking about how they felt that the system had improved and things were on the up and up. Basically, they mentioned everything else, but what is kind of, to me, is like the glaring elephant in the room here, that surely if you are committed to women's health, you should actually, as I said, you be, should be screaming black and blue about this.
100%. So they kind of wanted to introduce early medical abortions, which is essentially the abortion pills, which can be sent to people, you know, to their homes essentially as well, you know, via telehealth services and stuff. And they claim that that makes abortion more accessible and that, you know, women in remote areas can then be accessing abortion more easily. Otherwise, they might be, you know, unequally, I don't know, disadvantaged because they can't access abortion. But when we actually look at the stats, like, you're statistically a lot more likely to have a like hemorrhage, like retained placental products, infections, like quite major things, really. Like, it's not just like pain or like, you know, normal abortion things. This is like things that could be severely dangerous to people are happening a lot with early medical abortions, which are being touted as something that can just be couriered to somebody's home when they're living rurally. Like, how can we think that this is actually like safe for women's health? Yeah. For the abortion pills to be sent to their home so that they can then bleed to death at home? I don't know. Like, yeah.
And that, what you're saying there is, I don't think it's hyperbole or irrational either. It's not wild conspiracy scaremongering. These are like, women recently in Western nations have died exactly under these types of conditions, like infections, for example, that have got out of control and they didn't get medical help in time, and then their medical help they did get was not up to standard. And tragically, their lives have been lost after using the abortion pill. Well, what's shocking is when you look, like, the data tells us this time that basically if you have a surgical abortion, the risk of complication sits around 0.7%. And that's assuming that that data is accurate. Let's assume that it is. If you have an early medical abortion, that's the abortion pill, it's 2.6% you're going to end up with a complication. And if you have a late medical abortion, which is they use the abortion pill after 10 weeks, which as I understand it, still the manufacturer says that they don't recommend that, and yet obviously it's been done, your complication rate is 12.2%. So, and some of the, like you're pointing out some of these complications, they are serious. So if you retain parts of the baby, which is one of the common ones, then the risk of infection obviously goes up, and that's really serious. Hemorrhaging is a serious risk. These are not minor or inconsequential things, and some of them, when you look at the actual chart provided in the reporting, what you see is, like, if you have a surgical abortion, the chance of that happening, like, there's almost zero incidence of it. When you have an abortion pill abortion, it's just like it's massively represented in the numbers, and so like it's telling us, what that's telling us is this is a very dangerous pharmaceutical product that like, that's, any rational person would say that that's what that's telling us, but no one wants to acknowledge that.
And the vast majority of abortions are early medical abortions as well. So it's not like the smaller percentage of abortions are having a higher percentage of complications. It's like the majority of abortions are going to have a more likelihood adverse outcome.
It's 67% for those who are listening and are wondering. 67% of all abortions now are using the abortion pill, which is astounding because you go back prior to 2020, and you're talking about 38% of abortions. So that they're now in the majority, and it's a massive increase. And to your point, I actually interviewed a researcher and author and journalist from the States actually earlier this week for my Dispatches podcast. I'm going to be publishing the episode tomorrow on Saturday. And she has a specialty in this area. And she talks about the fact that, and I hadn't really considered it this way before, but basically she said what this pill does is it actually induces a medical event in a woman. And so it's, and then what they're doing is when they talk about safety, often what they mean is it doing what it intends to, you know, we intend it to do, which is induce this medical event, rather than like you and I look at it and go, hey, look at all these really dangerous things that are happening. They're looking at that and they're sort of going, well, yeah, but they're expected outcomes of using this particular thing. They're not really treating it the way probably you or I would, and would say, hey, hold on a minute, why are you doing this? And again, it comes back to, I think, really, it's so much of it is about convenience and cost, because it's cheaper. You don't have to take up a hospital bed. It's just, it really is a horrible anti-human system all the way through, from the deliberate ending of unborn human lives instead of providing care to mums in need, to even the way the mums are being treated now and just sort of steamrolled through, you know, like on a conveyor belt through the system with these abortion pills.
No, exactly. The other thing we're also seeing in that is they break it down, all the different adverse events, by they kind of divide it up so that the percentages all look quite low. But when you actually look at some of the things, it's like infection, hemorrhage, retained placental products, and then like some of those are like both of those combined. And so when you actually add up those ones, it actually makes the percentage like a lot higher, but they're kind of making all the percentages a little lower because some of them are actually like combined things. I don't know. That's kind of one thing I kind of noticed.
Yeah, it's like all round, like when you look at that chart, it is so, like everyone I've shown that chart to, they're kind of astounded by it when you see it in black and white, and you can see quite clearly that this one particular cheap, convenient abortion tool of the state is clearly causing way more harm, and no one seems to want to do anything about it.
And look, here we're looking at the number of females that are affected by it, you know, and we've got to remember that there's a mother behind each of these abortions who has lost her child, you know, intentionally in that instance from her side. But also, these are children that are being lost. Like the number of abortions that have been had, 17,785. That's like a lot of Kiwis losing their lives in 1 year. You know, if it was anything else that was causing that many deaths, it would be like, what on earth is going on?
And well, it's two classrooms, basically. It's two, in most settings, it'd be two whole classrooms of children almost every day. Exactly. And I, like, we right now, what makes this even more obscene, I think, is we are now in the midst of an increasingly worsening population crisis. And this is a Western problem, not just New Zealand, but we have not and are not having enough children. We're below replacement fertility rate. And you'd think, even if you were sort of thinking along purely utilitarian lines, you know, what's in the best interests of the country and, you know, the economic stability and health of our country going forward, just being able to afford services and pay for them, you need more young people who are actually going to be working in the future to pay the tax bill. And so even at that level, we should be like looking at this and saying, hold on a minute, maybe we need to actually change what we're doing here. So even if you're not going to look at the moral issue, like you and I are passionately concerned about the moral question of how we treat the most vulnerable human beings and members of our community. But even if you're not willing to look at that, surely you can look at the reality of this situation where we're effectively, our nation is on a sort of suicidal spiral with this kind of behavior, and it's only getting worse.
Well, it's like nearly 1 in 4 babies are aborted before they're even born. That's like 1 in 4 taxpayers, you know, future taxpayers, as you're saying. So,
And I mean, look, right. we don't mean to sound callous either. Like they are human persons, but the reality is, we, in order to afford to pay for things like the pension, like healthcare costs, and all those other important things you need to have a healthy, humane, flourishing society, you actually have to have young people coming in who can shoulder that burden. That's not what's going on. There's not enough young people coming into the system. And abortion is actively contributing to that population crisis in our country in a truly shocking way.
Okay, a couple of really quick questions, because I know we're kind of running towards our, you know, time. We don't want to make the podcasts too long. So what we're seeing is there's also a reduction in gestational age, and some people would say that's like a removing of barriers. Would we necessarily say that? Would we say it's removal of the safeguards, and that's why people are accessing abortion more early?
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was saying earlier, is like basically the way the report presents this is, oh, this is a positive. And I look at this, and even like regardless of where you sit on the abortion question, the moral question, surely we should all say, well, hold on, who says that's a positive? Like, it's a strange measure. Just because someone can have an abortion, a speedier abortion, and they can have the abortion when the child is younger, why would we say that somehow that's actually a positive and that's an advancement? It seems to me you've got to justify why that is the case. And so, especially in light of the fact that they probably claim, reduced risk, but clearly what we can see with the abortion pill is it's the exact opposite way around. But the question is, what's missing in this equation that was previously there? So previously, when abortion was readily and easily accessible in our country under the prior law, and women could get access to abortion when they wanted it, it was there, it was available, and it was relatively easy to access, but they weren't having them at such a young gestational age. The question should be, why not? Is it the fact that there's pre-abortion counselling missing? Is it the fact that maybe if they just had a bit more support around them, maybe do they not have community around them? Are they ringing an 0800 number on their own to get an abortion pill in desperation and panic, when maybe previously, because that option wasn't there, other members of the family or community might have come into the mix sooner, not after, but before the abortion, and that might have changed the whole equation. Was the fact that they had a little bit more time, did that give them the space to sort of stop and realise, actually, I don't need to abort my child? Things are tough right now, but actually I think we can do this. You know, all those kind of factors, no one is asking. Instead, they have just got this mentality, and it's just cruel when you think about it. So the cruelty of deliberately ending an unborn life, but also the way the women are treated in the process. And they're celebrating it was speedy, it was fast, it was good, like in their minds. And to me, there's nothing good about that. Efficiency is not a measure of good. It isn't. In fact, efficiency can be often is the exact opposite of the good. And in this case, clearly, you'd argue that a speedy, quick abortion is one in which almost certainly people are not really stopping and contemplating as they should be.
That's true. 100% agree. And then two other kind of stats that we're seeing kind of a bit missing is there's no real statistics of what abortions are happening after 20 weeks. We're told the number of abortions that are happening after 20 weeks, but we're not told what gestations are happening. Are there abortions happening at 30, 40, 35? Who knows? We don't know what gestation ages are happening. The other stat that we're missing is the stats on repeat abortions. Previous abortion reports used to have how many abortions each woman had, whereas that isn't recorded anymore. And why is it not? We're wondering. So I guess some of that information will need to be found out one day.
Well, and this is the key. This is becoming a frustratingly increasing problem, where these reports come out and now you've got this sort of bureaucratic sort of games that are being played. And the reports come out late in the year when there's less attention. Data is not consistently represented. Data is often missing. And then the members of the public actually have to do what they shouldn't really have to do, which is they then have to go actually pursuing the government with Official Information Act requests and saying, hey, what about this? What about this? Because things are not as transparent as they actually should be. And this is one area, you talked about the post 20 weeks, that's a consistent area where this has been a problem. Where what they do is they say in the report, here's the number of post 20 week abortions. They break every week prior to 20 weeks down, in smaller increments. And then suddenly you get to 20 weeks and it's just 20 weeks post and beyond. And we know why that's being done, because I think people would be probably shocked and horrified even if they saw, say, four or five abortions that were happening, say, in the tail end of the 30-week period, for example. And so you do that. Now, the claim I've heard often is, oh, no, we can't release that information because it might breach privacy somehow. You might know someone who's had one of these abortions, and if there's only a small number, that never really has made sense to me at all. And surely the reality is, you don't need, no one's going to figure out who these people are. That's just the reality of it. And so, but what is clearly going on here is the downplaying, or the sort of there's a subterfuge going on here. You can see, as you know, when you look at that data, you see, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, and all of a sudden, 20 weeks, bang, it's just this strange cutoff. And we know why. It's because of the reality of even most pro-choice people, they are extremely uncomfortable, if not outright opposed, to abortion happening after 20 weeks. And the later it happens, the stronger the opposition gets. And it seems to me that it is nothing more than playing politics and ideological games with the data itself. And again, like you say, the number of repeat abortions, like that's been data that's previously been in recent reports and now it's missing from this report. Which, what does that lead you to ask? It leads you to ask, why is it not in here? Is this just incompetence? Like they haven't put all their reporting together properly? Did they not collect the data? Is it some policy change we don't know about? Or is there something that they don't want the public to see readily that's going on with repeat abortions in our country now?
So to wrap up this, we just want to talk about a couple of different things that you might not be aware of. So first of all, we want to acknowledge that for every abortion that happens in New Zealand, there's also a father that has lost his child, either because they've coerced the woman into having the abortion or against their will. And sometimes there are fathers who have lost their children to abortion and are traumatized by it or really hurt by it. So if that might be you or somebody that you know, we encourage you to go to our website, myvoice.nz. And there is support available for men who are struggling with post-abortion regret or hurt. And that might be super recent, might be more historical. Like, please get in touch. The other thing that we've got coming up is our National Pro-Life Conference. This is going to be held the day before the March for Life next year in March, on March the 6th in Auckland. So, and then on the March the 7th, we have got the National March for Life. So we encourage you to come along to both if you can make it. We're going to have topics covering both abortion, euthanasia, so many different things in between, covering both those topics. So including we're going to have Brendan there. So we're looking forward to having you there, Brendan, too. But yeah, get in touch if you're keen for some flyers to give away to your friends. And yeah, we'll see you there.
Yeah, can I say too, Lydia, just to add to that as well, that I think that if you asked me earlier about, you know, what's not in here, and I think what's not really shown here is the true reality of what every abortion represents. And your eyes can sort of glaze over when you look at those total raw data and sheets of statistics and, adverse reactions and graph after graph, etc. But what we often forget is that these are real women, real mothers, real fathers, real unborn children who have had their lives lost at the hands of an abortionist in an abortion clinic. It is families, siblings, grandmothers, grandfathers, everyone in the community, the wider community is impacted by this. And the reality is that, like, I know Voice for Life is passionate about this, that we need to find more caring and more humane and less violent, like non-violent solutions to the challenge of unplanned or unexpected or difficult pregnancy. And this is not it. And that's often what we forget when we look at the data, is that these are lives that are lost and are damaged, sometimes irreparably damaged. And this is sold as empowerment and women's rights, and it's nothing of the sort. And the data doesn't really, raw data doesn't really convey that to you.
100% agree. And so we grieve with those women, you know, who are suffering. And we mourn the loss of those babies as well because, yeah, like you say, they are real human beings. Well, that wraps up today's episode. Thank you for listening. For more information, visit our website, voiceforlife.org.nz. And hopefully we'll be able to see you at our Pro-Life Conference and the March for Life next March. We look forward to it. Thanks for listening.
See you, everybody.
The Pulse podcast is brought to you by Voice for Life New Zealand. If you enjoyed this show and you think that having a strong pro-life voice in the public square is essential, then please support this podcast and all of the other important pro-life work that Voice for Life is engaged in at voiceforlife.org.nz/donate. That's voiceforlife.org.nz/donate. Link in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll catch you next time on The Pulse.